It's President's Day, right?
Good morning, everyone. Today is the 19th of February. It is President's Day and a Monday morning, week three of the short session. This is the House Committee on Economic Development and Trade. And as is my practice, I'll try and get started as promptly as possible and benefit the people who come on time, not the ones that arrive later. Welcome, Vice Chair. Today we are doing an information meeting. And it's not an informational hearing, it's an informational meeting, so I don't need to gavel that in, but we're going to be talking about the Oregon Green Energy Fund. Actually, we have three information sessions scheduled for the next three meetings, unless, of course, we get some pressing legislation from the Senate that comes to the committee, and we'll put that at the front of the queue. In any event, this morning we're going to be talking about the Green Energy Fund. I would like to welcome Commissioner Cribbins and Neil Sakin to come forward, and we will hear from you. And then when you're finished, we are going to be making a telephone connection with Brian Young in the governor's clean energy sector from Washington State. So
good morning,
and thank you for being here on a frosty Monday morning.
It is. Good morning. I'm Melissa Cribbins. I'm a Coos County Commissioner, and I'm the co-chair of the Community Economic Development, Transportation, Energy, Environment, and Land Use Committee for the Association of Oregon Counties, which is why I'm here today.
Could you say that again?
Yeah, I know. We just keep making up the names, so whatever you say works. I'm from Coos Bay, which, as you may or may not know, it's a very exciting day in Coos Bay because we have snow. And my son, who's 12 and in the back, missed it. And so I'll be paying for this for a while. But it is a snow day in Coos Bay.
It's a holiday and a snow day. That just doesn't seem fair.
I know. My Facebook newsfeed is covered with pictures of snow. For years, Oregon was a national leader in clean energy investments, bringing jobs and investments to many parts of Oregon, most especially for me, to parts of rural Oregon. However, over the last few years, we've lost that leadership position, due in some part to the fact that we've lost a lot of the tools that we used to use in order to promote investments in homegrown clean energy programs. As Oregon enters the next phase of clean energy investments, we need new tools to help Oregon-based businesses across the state access capital to grow their businesses and create jobs. Last fall, the Association of Oregon Counties hosted a group of commissioners and stakeholders to help develop that tool, and that was the committee that was formerly Energy, Environment, and Land Use that I was a co-chair of at that time, too. And we're here today to present this concept to you. While it's too soon for AOC to have taken a position, it's fair to say that there has been great bipartisan interest, which is always interesting at the Association of Oregon Counties because we have a hugely diverse political group of commissioners that we try to bring together on any given issue. And even issues sometimes that it seems like everyone will agree on, it turns out that everyone doesn't, which I know is a shock to all of you. So it's nice to see commissioners from across the state come together on this issue. Our colleague and Burns District Heating Project lead, Lori Cheek, couldn't join us today, but we have a four-minute video that underscores the importance of the potential value of this loan program. The heating district received initial money from Meyer Memorial Trust to have bridge funds to launch this project that they were trying to create, but the temporary loan drew to an end, and as you know, a bridge loan is only good for bridging, so you have to have a permanent lender at the end. The community needed to find a loan that would enable them to own and take over the project. They met with a lot of different groups, including current state loan programs, conventional banks, and USDA rural development, but couldn't find a loan that fit the program in the length of time that they had. With a great deal of time and energy and the creative support of a nonprofit lender, Burns was able to finally secure the funds. It now owns the facility and can grow it to meet the needs of the downtown core. According to Lori and the Harney County Board of Commissioners, if a loan like this had existed, it would have met their needs. So now we'll watch the video.
Very good. Thank you.
Thanks.
Harney County started out as a ranching community and in the late 20s became a huge supplier of fine lumber to the nation. Changes to national forest policy at the national level undermined the ability to harvest, and the long-term 50-year contract that Edward Hines Lumber Company expired.
Harney County is probably the single most isolated community in the state of Oregon. we're 130 miles from anybody. Because of that, we have to rely on each other. We don't have tsunamis coming here. We could have earthquakes. A forest fire could take this entire town out, and there's no way we could stop it. The ability to clean up our forests, to sustain what we love and why we live here, is a perfect fit for us. It's biomass all the way.
Well, biomass technology works really well for burns because they're cold, so they have high heating bills. They are close to the woods and therefore very close to the raw materials that they can utilize to heat their buildings. And three, they are culturally used to working with the forests around here, and so it's a technology that fits all three of those aspects.
Every time there's a logging project, they have tons of logging slash, and they either burn it, put the smoke and the carbon into the air, or we have an opportunity to grind it up and bring it down here and use that.
Had it been burned in a pile, it would have been a low temperature fire producing a lot of smoke and particulates. Here, it's very clean.
When we started this out, it was a school with a need, a county with a boiler that had just been condemned, and we were told we could run it through one more winter, but then we had to figure out something different. So that started us sitting down together and talking and saying, could we share some costs some way? And as we got to talking, we realized that the model that was most beneficial was a not-for-profit, and then the light bulb went on for all of us, and we said, this should be a co-op.
Well, we couldn't have done this without public partners. We started the project with help from the Oregon Department of Forestry. Then we got a grant from the U.S. Forest Service for design and engineering. And from there, we were able to take the outputs of those two projects and essentially go get construction financing. And we got that through a foundation primarily, the Meyer Memorial Trust, as well as a backing from the U.S. Endowment for Forestry and Communities, and then the community invested as well.
We anticipate the cost being very predictable and being at that level, or perhaps even slightly less, so very predictable cost of heat for the school system for the next 25 to 50 years.
This will give us the opportunity to have a massively more affordable heat. I'm talking 80% reduction. That's like something out of the Land of Oz. And that will make a huge difference in where that money goes for services, for employment, and for development.
In the late 20s became a huge supply.
Excellent.
It was a great video. I don't know that we want to watch it twice.
And I'm sure they're appreciating that project today.
I'm sure they are. And as all of you probably know, but energy bills are a huge cost to counties. Ours is well over $100,000 a year for just my county, just to heat our courthouse and other associated buildings. So anything we can do to drive those costs down is always appreciated. So now I'll turn it over to Neil.
Morning. We have a PowerPoint. My name is Neil Sacon. I'm a Washington-based attorney, and I work with housing and community development groups throughout Oregon and Washington. You know, you watch a video like that, and you wonder why there's a single drop of foreign oil burning in any public building in the state of Oregon. This is all technology. We're not talking about hydrogen cars. We're talking about burning wood, which we have a lot of here. The technology was readily available, is used in Europe and being implemented throughout Europe in a lot of small communities. It scales. You can do it anywhere. But one of the keys that the commissioner spoke to was the financing. And with any kind of economic development, the bricks you're putting together is that capital stack. Where is all this money coming from to pay for projects like this? The timing, the underwriting, it's not the same as going to buy a car or buy a home. In most of these cases, because these things are doable but they're innovative, there is not a readily available underwriting model for commercial banks. You can't just go down to your local banker and find the funds to pay for these. At the same time, because they're innovative, they're really basic building blocks of economic development. So the story of the Green Energy Fund is really a story of economic development using resources that we have right here in Oregon to get these kinds of projects moving ahead, and using public funding to try to fuel some of these projects where the private sector, for pretty good reasons, and I've always worked in the private sector, can't come in and underwrite and fund these kinds of projects. The current framework, again, as the commissioner indicated, there's lots of programs. The programs come and go. You can see from this graphic, we've had programs come and go here in Oregon, and it really takes a toll. And the idea would be to have some kind of consistent but flexible source of financing. The clean energy sector is, in many people's eyes, the next big thing in some ways. In other ways, you saw those old pictures of Harney County. In a lot of these cases, you're talking about technologies that have been around, available, and in use for many, many, many years. So I think it's one of these instances where there's great new nomenclature, green, clean energy, all that, all those kinds of things. But in some respects, you're talking about things that have been around for a long time and trying to find ways to finance those things. There is an emerging trend, and I'd say emerging over the last 20 years, of trying to find ways to get the public and the private sectors working together. And you've all heard public-private partnership as a term thrown around. At a federal level and at a state level, there's emerging trends to accomplish that. And on this graphic, you'll see a few examples of states that are working to set up state clean energy funds. They use different approaches. We're going to hear from the Washington Department of Commerce momentarily, which is a lot. Their approach is a lot like the one that we're proposing here in Oregon, and their approach is one that's being used really all over the country, starting at the federal level, where the federal government comes in and the state government in Washington and other states to manage outcomes. Folks like you would make the public policy decisions. You would decide what kinds of projects you want funded, how you want them funded, how you want them managed, but you'd be managing outcomes. You're not really managing risk. So then the idea would be you'd set up a relationship with a private sector, typically nonprofit lenders, that would go out and manage that financial risk. They would do the underwriting. They would do the project sourcing. They would make sure that the money gets paid back as lenders. And then they would report back to the outcome managers, which could be state agencies, on what's going on. So you generate a lot of metrics, and again, you'll hear from in Washington what kind of metrics they look at. And then based on those metrics, the state policymakers can then decide on what adjustments they're going to make. We'd like to see more of this kind of funding, less of that kind of funding, so on and so forth. Including, perhaps this lender hasn't done the greatest job. We're not going to fund them anymore. These cycles can repeat on an annual basis. This is a very typical pattern that you see on this graphic, where there's a notice of funding availability, which kind of sets the rules and the frameworks. There's an application and selection process. The lenders and program participants are selected. They go out and in the green area. They're deploying the funds, doing the underwriting, managing the portfolio, really dealing with these kinds of risk issues, and then reporting back to the state policymakers how they're doing. And then based on that information that comes back, the state policymakers can then make adjustments and then go back to the beginning. New NOFA, new frameworks, adjustments, so on and so forth. It's a cycle that keeps repeating. This is not similar to the wood burning idea. This is not new. There was just the NOFA announced for housing to make funds available for housing groups. They'll apply, they'll be scored, they'll be selected, they'll deploy, they'll report back, and then the cycle begins anew. But you don't have the Oregon Housing Department going out and building houses. They're not going out and managing rental units. Private sector takes care of that, and then that sector reports back to the state. So this cycle has been working. The federal government uses it at the Department of Treasury level. The New Market Tax Credit Program, the Community Development Financial Institution Program are examples of that, where it's the same kind of cycle. There's a notice of funding availability, there's an application process, there's deployment and execution, and then there's reporting back, there's adjustments, and then the cycle begins anew. Very efficient. And in many sectors that it's been applied, it just has worked terrifically. In this, in the case of the Harney County project, if Lori were here, she would describe to you the months and months and months it took to knit together all these funding sources. You can't just go and apply to a bank for what they do. And having lenders that know how to underwrite projects like this is key. I think the lender involved with this particular project was Kraft 3. They're a large regional nonprofit revolving loan fund. They're not using a cookie cutter approach to their lending. If you went to this project to a commercial bank, the banker would tell you, well, we do square pegs here. We don't do round pegs. We can't help you. Kraft 3 can do pegs of all kinds of shapes because they're set up differently and they're used to it. They're used to working with community groups like this, and they want to see these projects happen. The loan officer was integral to the development of the project in terms of providing technical assistance, and that's a key. And then going back to the foundation of this, you have these private sector, nonprofit lenders managing that kind of risk, managing those opportunities, and then reporting back to state policymakers, and you can end up being able to replicate these kinds of projects much more easily than you normally would. It's not just, to be clear, it's not just about wood-burning projects. There's other kinds of financing opportunities that are out there that create primary, secondary, and tertiary kinds of economic benefits. This is a project that happens to be in Washington, where it was funding for some green technology at this inn. It kept the inn in business, and then the inn in turn generates the kinds of economic sector development you'd expect from a tourist type of business. So this is kind of at the other end of the spectrum. Other ideas that that can be implemented include residential photovoltaic systems for residential, industrial development, and all kinds of commercial development. The key, again, here, I think, is having you all set the tone, you all set the policy, you all decide what the fiscal parameters are, and then you select partners to manage those programs that know how to manage these kinds of deployments. They've got boots on the ground in terms of selecting projects, underwriting the projects, and then making sure you get the money back. In some cases, maybe it is a grant type of program, but I think nevertheless you still want to be managing outcomes and managing risks and making sure that you're getting bang for your buck. I grew up professionally working on housing projects, and I came into the sector sort of at the tail end of the old 60s projects where HUD went out and built these monstrous housing developments that are a nuisance to this day, which in the 60s seemed like a great idea, and frankly compared to what preceded them, which was nothing, they were. But it's an example where having the government directly involved with the managing of these things wasn't working too good. And by the late 70s into the 80s, there was new thinking that really revolved around these kinds of public-private partnership arrangements. And this is an example of. And it gives you a lot of flexibility. The Green Bank. It's the name I think our working group has chosen. I think we could call it a lot of different things. I mean, I think of it as being green too, but I really think of it as being more of a fund that can help to speed innovation in sectors of the Oregon economy that can then lead to other kinds of growth. I think clean energy is something that in Oregon we've got lots of resources available to do that, both in terms of intellectual capital and in terms of natural resources. So this is a good opportunity to develop, call it the sector. So call it what you will, we're calling it a green bank. But the key, I think, is this public-private partnership idea with an accountability cycle that really works on an annual basis so that policymakers can adjust the landing zone as they go along without having to directly manage the deployment risk.
Well, thank you, Mr. Sacon. Commissioner Cribbins, questions from the committee? Yes, Representative Marsh.
Thank you, Chair. So what kind of investment are you looking at from the state in this, like proportional to the private investment that comes in? Is there?
Do you mean in terms of leverage or in terms of dollar amounts to fund?
Well, dollar amount. I mean, however you would use the dollar amount.
I think Brian is going to have information of what the leverage has been in Washington. So I'll let him address that. It can be pretty high. I mean, you're talking multiples 10 and 20 to 1 on projects like this. The dollar amount, I think that's up in the air. I think the idea right now is to get make sure we're all understanding the concept and the funding level. I think that comes in the next session. I don't think we're proposing that this session.
Thank you. Other questions? Yes. Vice Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for being here. I apologize for being tardy. I appreciate the work, especially Commissioner Cribbins' work on this and through AOC and course Craft 3. I think you remember my grandiose ideas of having wind turbine projects in North Curry County.
Absolutely.
For the county's ability to diversify its revenue portfolio and have the ability to supplement what we aren't getting from the ONC and timber revenues anymore. And we did have a project called Three Dimensional Timberlands at one point down in Yucca Creek that was looking at biochar and being able to get some fuel out of the mix. And it would be nice if we could utilize the biomass in our area for our forestry slash and so forth. What other projects are happening that I might not be aware of, Commissioner, in our region?
Cross-laminated timber, I think, would be another good example of a project that could benefit from an investment like this. That's the big one. We've had discussions with several forest product manufacturers about the possibility of cogen. It's difficult on the coast because, as you know, you only have half an arc. So having that makes it much harder to make it pencil out because you have to expand your area for bringing wood product in. But it's an area that we continue to look at, and I think this has a lot of possibilities for different projects that would traditionally be very difficult to fund.
Great. Well, thank you for all your work on this. I really appreciate
Thank you.
Any other comments or questions? Well, then, thank you both very much, especially thank you for being here first thing on Monday morning on President's Day.
Thank you all for being here, too.
Very good. We're going to go ahead and make a call out to Mr. Young in Washington State. While we're doing that, I'll note for the record that Representative McEwen is excused today.
Her husband's still recovering from surgery.
Good morning, Brian. This is David Gomberg with the Economic Development and Trade Committee down in Oregon. We've got you live and on the record with us this morning.
All right. Good morning, Chairman. And thank you, committee members, for your time and interest in our program, the Washington Clean Energy Fund, and specifically our grants to nonprofit funders. I'll go through a bit, and then I'm happy to answer questions at the end of it.
Well, let me interrupt you right at the outset and just have you introduce yourself for our record.
Sure, of course. So I'm Brian Young. I'm the governor's clean technology sector lead at the Washington State Department of Commerce.
Thank you so much.
Okay, well, I will get right into it. So I want to tell you a little bit about our clean energy fund as it exists today, and then I'll get a little bit into the specifics of the grant program. So clean energy fund was started in 2013, and we've so far lent out, or granted out, sorry, there is no funding, granted out over $72 million in funds, and we have just been appropriated in this most recent capital budget an additional $40 million in funds. So the clean energy fund will exist and will continue and has seen greater and greater support as the longer it's been in existence. The overall purpose of this fund is to research, is to fund research, development, demonstration, and deployment of clean technology, both to help the state in its attempts to reach greenhouse goal, greenhouse gas reductions, as well as, and most importantly, from my mind, stimulate economic development in our clean technology sector. So all the funds from the, for the Clean Energy Fund do come out of our capital budget, hence they can only be used for project, the capital expenses and projects. All funds require a one-to-one, minimum of one-to-one match, and more leverage is always appreciated and looked for. And all of the awards that we give out through this fund have to be awarded competitively. We will have external boards that make this external to the state, private individuals that will make decisions on the RFP process and make the decisions on the final awards. So with that, I won't, unless there's interest, I won't talk about the other programs that aren't, don't have to do with our loan program. Specifically, we have about one third of our program has been grants to nonprofit lenders. Today, we've granted over $28.6 million to nonprofit lenders in the state. We have two buckets that we support in that. We have loans specifically for energy efficiency in for residential for residential loans. We also have a specific loan fund for businesses in the clean tech sector. So loan fund, we call that our future energy fund. And it, again, only provides loans to businesses that meet our definition of the clean technology sector. All the loans, all the grants we make require that the loan program set up be in existence for a minimum of 10 years. So we know that we have at least a 10-year tail where we'll have what, yeah, maybe call a green bank. We don't use that terminology necessarily, but we know these programs will be around in existence for a minimum of 10 years. So a little bit about why we chose to make grants to nonprofit lending institutions. First, the nonprofit side, for a whole realm of reasons, we thought it reduced our risk to maintain relationships only with nonprofit lenders. Just because with the for-profit lenders, there's just some current concerns about how that could, kind of the optics of that and how that money might be used in a for-profit situation. So we have stuck to nonprofit lenders. And pretty much the reasons why are the expertise that already exists. The institutions that we work with, they already have expertise. They have risk mitigation programs in place for their own business. They have the knowledge and the staff to go out and make good, solid loans, something that we as a state do not necessarily have. And with that, not only to avoid the kind of the monetary risk around making loans, but also avoids what we see as somewhat of a political risk where we don't want the optics of agencies or any government-related groups making decisions on who gets funded, how those funds are used. So it's also kind of a risk mitigation strategy on our side as well. And so, yeah, basically that expertise and the reduction of risk are the two main areas that we focused on when we put together these programs. We think that the folks who have the money right now that are making these loans are doing it not only for the good of the state, but also the good of their portfolio. And so it's kind of a win-win for both organizations. So with that, what we've seen so far within our program, specifically in our business lending program, we've granted out $11 million of state money, and that $11 million has been leveraged with over $70 million of private capital. So we've got basically 7-to-1 ratio of private to public money, and that is what we expect to see continue by contract over the 10 years of the program. We actually, in some of our residential lending programs, we've even seen much greater leverage than that. So the leverage has been great, and we actually, in our RFP processes, we asked the lenders that we're applying to tell us the kind of leverage that they were able to get and would be willing to get contracted towards. Because our by legislation, we only require a 1-to-1 leverage. But when we went out there with those competitive RFP processes, we're getting on a business loan portfolio 7-to-1 leverage. So we're very happy with the leverage. We do have some metrics. Our recording, we require quarterly reports. We actually get monthly reports from a lot of our lenders because they already have those programs in place to provide those reports. And so we'll see monthly reports. We know we've already saved over 180,000 metric tons of greenhouse gas reduction. We've created or retained over 337 jobs directly that we can attribute to the loans made out of this business loan portfolio. So with all that, I'm happy to take any questions. Just in general, we've been extremely happy with the program. I think the folks in the state of Washington in the clean technology sector have been very happy with it as well. If nothing else, it just gives those businesses or those clean tech projects a place to go and look for capital, hopefully receive capital. And if they can't, the other thing we've seen a lot of is it helps them understand what they need to do as a project to be able to, or as a company, get to a place where they can get capital for their ideas. So it's been kind of a learning tool for everyone as well. With that, I'll take any questions. Appreciate your time.
Thank you very much, Mr. Young. Any questions? Well, I think you've answered them all in your presentation, so we do appreciate you joining us this morning, and we'll go ahead and let you go.
Thank you very much.
You're very welcome. All right. Colleagues, anything else on this topic this morning? All right. Well, I do appreciate your attention. I know for some the drive-in was a little dicey this morning, and we will be continuing to start our meetings at 8:30. Ms. Leone, what have we got coming up next?
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, on Wednesday, we have a panel on affordable housing and economic development, looking at the planning efforts and listening sessions that Housing and Community Services recently completed. And then a week from today, we're putting together a panel on economic development and cannabis. So those are the two that we have planned coming up.
Excellent. And I think Director Salazar will be talking to us about the statewide listening tour that that Housing has just completed.
Correct.
Representative Marsh?
Thank you, Chair. I just wondered, I think this is a really interesting presentation. I was wondering if we could get some wrap-up comments in terms of next steps or where they intend to take this. Is that appropriate? Or I can also talk to them offline.
Does anybody have any closing comments for us? For the record, they're all looking at each other.
The good news for you is...
And Mr. Sakon, I just need you to say that you're still Mr. Sakon
I'm
for
still
a record.
I'm still Sakon. And I've never, except for I gave this presentation on the Senate side, I'm not a political person, so I'm sure I'll say something that is to your advantage and not mine. I think what's happening right now is there's an education piece. It's a potentially complicated area because there's a lot of opportunities. There's a lot of different ways this can go. I think Representative Marsh's question of, you know, how much funding is just one example, whether it's a grant program or a loan program and whether there's really any difference. I mean, all those kinds of discussions need to take place. This is a short session. It's not going to happen this session. So the idea really is to have these kinds of informational sessions, present the idea, hear what kinds of questions come up, have more discussions about how this might be structured, and then for the next full session to come back with a more complete program and legislative proposal. So the steps right now are first thinking it through, then refining proposals. At least that's my understanding. This is what I've been told about the strategy.
Very good.
That's good. Thank you.
Anything else? Colleagues, anything for the good of the order? We've got information hearings coming up, but I'm going to be trying to keep them as efficient as possible and be respectful of your time during the coming week. So if there's nothing else for the committee, I'll go ahead and adjourn this meeting. Thank you all.